Welcome to Tuesday morning. Hope you guys are having a great one. So much happening in the world of fishing the last couple of weeks. Tournaments are flying. Everybody's getting their spring fever fix going on. For those of us up a little further north, even I got out this weekend. It was like 65 degrees around here. So I hope you guys did too. We have Tyler Williams with us. We really enjoyed having him on the show when he won Watts Bar a few months ago in the fall. And he is just, he's one of the young guns that's lighting them up out on tour, along with Ben Milliken and several others that are all just killing it. But he's definitely one of them. But I wanted to have him on because he's doing it differently. And he's fishing a lot differently than a lot of the finesse heads are doing with, you know, the Japanese style, shaky, jig headed, you know, pinging a minnow thing. A lot of finesse stuff going on, but not with Tyler. Tyler's a power fisherman. He's developed strategies with his forward-facing sonar using a big jig, a 3/4 ounce jig, and some other techniques that a lot of guys are using, like a jerk bait and stuff. So I'm very excited to have him with us again today. So we're going to be bringing him on here in just a minute. And we got a lot going on. The Classic's coming. We've got getting ready to go to that. A lot of you guys saw our boys down at Texas. It's good to have you guys back. You guys been on the road for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Good to be back.
Not the big fish in Fork. I don't know if I'd want to leave.
Yeah.
How did you manage to get Justin off the banks of Lake Fork? I don't know how you did it.
I don't know. He was catching 7-pounders like they were going out of style.
What's up with that, Justin? You had the gift. But they were fishing from the bank at ponds and lakes nearby. And every other day I get a picture of a giant fish, Justin holding a giant fish.
Just, throwing that chatter wagon around, getting after it. Just got lucky, you know.
Yeah.
No skill involved. Just casting and reeling. One bites it. Somehow got it in.
I think it was that freeloader trailer.
It might have been, man. That was my first time slinging that freeloader on the back of a chatterbait. And might have to steal some from Jocelyn or something.
Yeah, because I have so many.
Because they're hard to get. And
yeah, we got them.
I got some confidence in that little guy now. So
number one.
It was a good time. The first one I caught, the big one, first cast, walking down the bank. And I set the hook. I'm reeling it in. I thought maybe it was like a 3-pounder. And Rich starts running like he's 18 again down the bank. And this fish goes underneath like this grass mat. And the head just pops out. Rich freaking bear claws it and gets it.
And boy,
I just seen that's the mouth
a really
come
good
out,
friend.
It was a big one.
I saw you in the water, Rich. Like you were standing in the
that
water.
Was that that was at Toledo. Yeah.
Why?
Just trying to get a better angle to fish. I mean, you talk about fishing, you sell fishing, you watch fishing for 2 weeks straight, but the only thing you really don't get to do that much of is fish. So it's like in that, you know, small windows you get, you gotta get after it, man. Gotta make it happen.
Rich caught a spot on Toledo. How about that?
Yeah, a little spotted bass.
Yeah, we fished when we could and ended up catching a couple along the way and ate a bunch of crawfish. So
I did see that a lot.
You guys finally got into the crawfish.
We got into them.
How many times did you have the crawfish for dinner?
Three or four.
Yeah, three times.
I think that's an underestimation.
I think so too.
3 or 4 times a day, maybe a day.
It was tough to get them in Louisiana.
Yeah,
there was one place that had them, and it was the first night they had them. And after that night, we got lucky that you couldn't get them again.
Yeah,
I saw Jordan Lee going for it. He was wanting the crawfish and the king's cake and the tamales, all the local stuff when they were down there at Toledo. But it was interesting to see Jordan Lee back on the elites for the first time, and he is tearing it up.
Oh yeah,
I mean, dude, it's like he didn't miss a step.
No.
Right back to the top.
Never expect anything less with him. Right? I mean, you know what you're getting when you get Jordan Lee back on the elites, and
he's not intimidated by the forward facing sonar, you know, brigade.
Yeah, he's using it just like just like the rest of them, man. And we got to mention that, you know, congrats to Trey McKinney. You know, we weren't able to, you know, line him up for this week, but we will be talking to him sometime soon. But an amazing win at, you know, the young age of 19 years old. And I just hope that his win and what he has accomplished and what a lot of these rookies are now accomplishing isn't being overshadowed by negativity that's flowing through the fishing industry right now. And really, you know, that's, I think there's, you know, a lot of that going on. And whether you have, whether you're on one side of the fence or the other, when it comes to forward facing sonar, love it or hate it, right? I'm cool with whatever your opinions are, but let's not attack a 19-year-old kid on social media because he's being successful with a technology that is newer to the sport. You know, I really, really hope that as a whole we can figure this thing out, because there shouldn't be as much negativity. And I'm not talking about forward facing sonar, whether you like it or not. I'm talking about the fact that, you know, that this young man has accomplished something now that no one else has, and he worked his butt off to do it, just like the rest of them. And, you know, I hope it's not overshadowed by the venom.
I think when, you know, this is like this is a line from Moneyball movie. I'm sure it's a great movie. You guys got to check it out. But it's the first ones through the wall are always the ones that get bloodied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these kids are breaking down. They're busting through that wall,
mm-hmm.
With new techniques and new technology, and they're suffering a little bit. They're getting beat up a little bit out there, but they're setting the pace, man. Mm-hmm. And it's always gonna be the case. And I'm not, you know, here's the deal. When they came, the drop shot was something that came into fishing and frustrated the crap out of me,
mm-hmm.
because I could not dial in quickly enough. And I got my teeth kicked in, you know, with that technique when it first came down the pike. Then, you know, one of the other big ones was they took away fall tournaments, and it became and was all about sight fishing for years. And, you know, that's who became, you know, famous, was the guys that got good at sight fishing. The guys that got good at drop shotting, they're some of the marquee guys that we still hold on a high pedestal, because they were the first ones to embrace the new techniques and new technology, mm-hmm. and the way things were changing. They were the first ones, and these guys are that too. And mm-hmm. yeah, they're gonna suffer a little negativity. I don't, negative or positive, it's good, man. You're grabbing the attention of people. You're doing it better than anybody else on the planet can. So I credit all of them for that. And Trey in particular, what a great tournament, man. Mm-hmm. Just catching those giants. I'm waiting on
Tyler.
You.
Yeah, Tyler's ready. I want to say one more thing. Like Trey, me and Rich, we've had him on the show, and we talked to him after day one or something. I mean, the kid gets it. He's respectful. He's a great kid. His parents are super nice. It's a shame, all this negative stuff.
There is a lot of it. It's upsetting to scroll through some of the stuff on social right now and see all the venom that's flowing. It's a bad deal. Honestly, if you're a grown man and you're, you know, taking shots at a 19-year-old kid who just won a blue trophy, look in the mirror for a second. That's the last thing I'll say on it. But yeah.
Everybody had a chance to do what he did.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he did it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like being a sore loser. I hate it. I don't like hearing it either. But that being said, you know, I want to make a transition, because I mean, there's one thing I love about this young man, and we had him on the show in the fall, is positivity. You know, just always, you know, no matter what, thrown at him, and he had a lot thrown at him last year when he won, you know, just smiling, great attitude. I love that, embracing the new technology and doing extremely well with it, and just come off another big finish at Lake Fork. Glad to have him with us, Tyler Williams.
The main event. Dude.
How's it going?
Going good. We've got good signal now. I know we had bad signal. We had to get looks like you're solid right now.
I think so. I had to go to my truck, but
That works really good, man. Congratulations, man. You're off into the elites and you're flying, having a lot of success. That's got to feel pretty good.
It's fun for sure. I'm enjoying every second of it.
As you should, you know, as you should. I mean, were you nervous? Like, I mean, you're out there and you're seeing Greg Hackney. You got Ike rolling up. Jordan Lee's in the mix. You're idling past these guys. Did you have butterflies or how were those first couple of days on the elites?
I wasn't really nervous at all about like who I was fishing against or anything like that. It was more just like, how does everything run? Like all that behind the scenes stuff that I'm like, oh, I got to make sure I do this right. But when I fish, I just go fish against the fish. I don't really look at who's around me. And it's just
that's a positive. That's a great attitude. Great attitude to have. And I can understand you're a little bit anxious about your equipment after what happened on Watts Bar.
Yeah. It was trying to get everything perfect before the beginning of the year.
No kidding. Have you had any, like, I know, you know, famously you didn't get charged the night before one of the days at Watts. Has everything gone smoothly? I mean, it never goes smoothly. There's always something that goes haywire.
Right. I mean, so far it's good. I've had like some little things, but nothing that's like held me back at all. A lot of it's like just learning the like weigh-in procedures, like all that kind of stuff too. Not even just my equipment.
Yeah. That's all new, right? How is it different? How is it different from like the Opens and the other tournaments?
It's just, everything's like a lot bigger. It seems like bigger crowds, a little bit like it's more laid back, but there's also more responsibility to trying to make sure everything is perfect.
Like they make you wear shoes on stage.
Yes. So mad about that. I understand it, but
what's that sticker that you got on your boat? What does that say? I saw a picture of it, but
oh, it's the barefoot. So last year on live, someone, I think it was Greg Hackney, called me the barefoot bandit. It might have been Ronnie Moore, but then I put that sticker on. I'm like, next time I get on live, I want them to see that. It didn't take long to get back on live for everybody, but then I was like, barefoot equals big bags.
And I love it.
I think it held out this week.
No kidding, man. Is that legit though? You're not allowed to. They make you put shoes on.
Yep. Yeah, we have to. I didn't find out the hard way, but Kyle did, and I learned from him.
Yeah, you and Kyle always running around barefoot trying to find a pair.
I'd sit back and feel everything out a little bit and let others do things, and I'd watch and see what happened, and that way I didn't have to get in trouble.
Well, what happened to Kyle?
I'm not exactly sure what happened. I think he just got told he has to wear them.
Oh, okay.
Nothing crazy.
Like losing your catch for the day because you didn't wear shoes.
That would be bad. I'm not sure what they do.
Man, that's part of you guys' brand, you know?
I didn't even know it was my brand. I've always fished barefoot and it just turned into a thing.
That's so I think it's pretty cool. We have to get Bass to loosen up the regulations. Maybe there's some OSHA regulations for climbing stairs or something. You got to have shoes on.
Maybe. I'm not going to push it. Maybe if
are you going to pursue a deal with a sandal or flip flop company now that you have to wear them?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I know New Balance is pretty big back home.
They've got several
factories.
Perfect. Are you back home, by the way?
No, I probably won't go back until after the St. Lawrence. I just go on the road and pre-practice and go to events and just stay on the road.
Just living the life, man. Yeah. Catching bass, throwing a jig, no shoes. Come on.
I love it. I love it. Where are you now?
I'm still in Texas. I had a down day yesterday after 2 weeks straight. And then tomorrow, I'll probably stay tomorrow. And then I think I might head. Just no. Start heading north. Get ready for the classic.
Sure. Are you and JT still kind of still rooming together? Yeah. I know you guys camp, but Did you guys work together for these first two elite tournaments?
Yeah, we have. It's actually been going really well. We're still learning the whole 4 days and stuff like that. And because last year we could catch him 2 days in a row, but catching him that third day, it's like might happen, might not happen. And now you have to do it.
Yeah.
How have you guys done? Have you had to make some adjustments? What have you learned through that process?
Usually we have to find more stuff, more spots, more fish. Just always have something up our sleeve to make happen. But it also helps having less boats too. That way, like,
sure,
there's just places people would sit on. They might not catch the fish in the opens, but they'd at least be sitting there so you couldn't pull in there.
In your way.
Yeah. The way I fish, I haven't had a boat on anything I wanted to fish in two events.
Man, that's amazing. Well, you got 2.5 days though. Like, that's got to be a shocker for you guys. I mean, unlimited practice. Or no, it was 5 days for the open. So now you got 2.5 days. Does that cause pressure?
Not too bad. I kind of treat the first day of the tournament like another practice day. One of those practice days that you're sticking them. And then try to learn from there. At least that's the approach I'm taking at first. Mm. And it worked last week. So we'll see what happens going forward. But
that is that is a unique approach, actually. Just to think of that way, of that. You know, you're practicing, but you're setting the hook when everything bites.
Right. Like, you know how many people win practice?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I got to try to win practice the first day.
Right. Well, so how do you manage? So your first 2 days, or is it all on, you know, the outboard looking around? Or how do you use your 2.5 days?
Well, we actually get 3 full days, which made a pretty big difference. But usually I'll pre-practice, so I at least have some things. Like, my boat broke and I got no practice at all, I'd at least have like some spots, a brush pile I could roll up on, or something that might be good. Not that it is good, but just something. And then from there, I'll just try to expand and find new little things, fish my way into little sneaky spots and be like, oh, there's a fish in there out of the whole timber field. That one tree has one, and things like that, just to try to have something.
I got you. Yeah. So that's a change, right? Three days of practice. What is it? 3 days of practice and then the Wednesday off. Is that what they're doing on the elite?
So they did that for the first one because we had a meeting, but they're doing 3 full days and then tournament the next day. Like, there's no meeting or anything.
Wow.
And that's new, because last year it was still like the 2.5 day.
Oh, deal. Really? I was going to say, I don't know what the past was. I just.
That's good. We were, you know, on, I guess it was Toledo, we were going to dinner one night and we're watching boats run in, and I was like, it must be, you know, they must be having to get off the water at 4 o'clock. And then you know, we're coming back and there's another boat still running. I'm like, maybe it's 5 o'clock. And then it's like dark and there's still another boat coming in. I'm like, well, I guess there's either no, no time or somebody's out there breaking the rules, but
It's interesting. It's changing for us. It's changing, but for you, it's all brand new.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know what it was before, so everything's new to me.
Do you use all 3 days in full? Like, did you stay on the water until dark, like for all 3 days, or did you get off a little early to do tackle, or how do you work that?
For four, we had a really bad weather day the last day, and I knew from pre-practice where I was gonna fish and what I was gonna do, and then I didn't end up fishing that last day, mostly because of wind. Like, I would have been out there if it wasn't crazy, but it was pretty bad. Toledo, I used every day, though. There'll be some that I feel like I probably wish I had more time on, and then there'll be some that just kind of flow.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, I want to get into the nuts and bolts of how you're catching them and your techniques, but this is kind of more of a practice question. Like, you're amongst the group that's just smash forward facing. Do you spend any practice time? Do you just get up on the bank and look for spawners that could have been happening at fork, or get up and frog fish or flip jigs? Do you put any of that time in at practice at all?
On the bank, I'd probably say no. Although, like, I have a weird thing, because like, I don't like fishing shallow banks, but if there's like a bluff wall or something like that with like lay downs on it, I'll always check those. And it might just be a me thing, but
yeah.
I just like if I go to like a flat bank, I'm usually looking at what's the first piece of structure off the drop, like in 6 foot of water instead of right up on that. Always trying to find like a staging fish or something. And it may be where I'm from too, but just because we do a lot with rock piles and things, like you always try to find that one thing that they're going to. And we were never able to have spawn, like we could never have a spawn tournament back home. So I didn't really fish much during the spawn. So I don't really know much about the spawn.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. It's all closed season up in New England, right, and a lot of places during the spawn.
Right. That was,
wow.
It was definitely interesting. Like there's going to be some that, although there's a lot of fish that surprisingly spawn offshore too, that we caught last year throughout the opens, like between Toledo, Bugs Island, Wheeler, they'd spawn on like just stumps and random things out there. But I don't know. It's kind of my type of spawn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's stuff where you can use your electronics. You can see them. Right. They'll spawn in standing timber sometimes.
Right.
And those types of places. So, man, I mean, it's amazing. I'm blown away talking to you. Like, there's really, you know, if you really think about it, there's no need to go to the bank.
Not for me anyways. I mean, even without forward facing, I'd probably just get my teeth kicked in offshore because I don't like fishing the bank. It might be because I've gotten yelled at by a lot of dock owners back home.
Yeah, right.
I stay away from it.
That's funny. You know, it reminds me of David Fritz, who famously fished offshore. You know, that was his MO before all the new technology came out. And no, I mean, every fish on the lake would be on a bed and he'd still be out ledge fishing. And that's Tyler. Tyler, too, man.
Probably be brush pile fishing, hoping for the best.
Yeah. Well, let's take that moment and dive into it, because one of the things, and we talked about it, you know, when we had you on the show a couple months ago, you're throwing power baits in the face of a lot of guys finesse fishing with new technology. And I think it's so cool. I think it's just the beginning of what we're going to keep learning, but somehow you're managing to trigger big bites, winning bites, with big power baits on this technology that nobody else seems to have figured out yet.
Right. I don't even know. It's just kind of what I do. I just like throwing a jig.
Well, let me, cause we watched a lot and, you know, I've got a lot of experience on the water looking at these fish. The technique is like, get the bait above the fish, get them coming up. You're doing the exact opposite.
I was doing a little bit of both. Like offshore, if there was no bottom underneath them, I'd like have to like shake it above their head and get them to chase it and grab it. Or I'd like, it would fall even though it's a three quarter, and I'd like shake my rod and just let it, like they'd grab it on the fall. But it depended. Some of those shallow fish, you just flip to them and they just get it. Like they just look up and grab it.
Catch.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
Like fishing back home when live first came out.
When you say shallow, like how shallow were you fishing? We're talking about fork, I guess.
Yeah. Like I caught a couple fish in like 2 foot of water. I still saw them, but I was just looking up the bank and trying to follow them as they progressed.
And just firing that jig out. Now when you're shaking them down, or you're just watching the reaction to this fish and
much.
And if he come, but like a lot of the guys are commenting that, you know, if you get below the fish, that fish loses interest.
Right. There's like a certain, if you can drop it on his nose, like where he's swimming, he'll follow it down. But if you like throw it past him and then reel and it's under him, then he'll just swim away.
I gotcha.
Are you sticking with the three quarter even when you're up there shallow?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just controlling that rate of fall with it, right? I mean, you can.
Yeah, that's the whole. It's most like a lot of it, thanks to live, is just reading fish. Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people are overcomplicating fish.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just try to read them real quick and be like, okay, what do I need to do? And then sometimes it's just like, you wouldn't even need it because they just eat it really good. But then you get that one big fish that's seen a million lures. You could tell and try to trick that one.
What was your big fish for the week?
I caught a 9.9 on day one. That was
9.9
and a half inches.
23 and a half.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, catch an almost 10 pounder and you can't bring it in.
I posted a video of it last night. When I set the hook, it like started to rise up and I was like, so that is a bass. Like, it felt really big on the hook set, but then it flew like 2.5-3 feet out of the water like a smallmouth.
Oh my god.
Watch, like, now that I can watch like live, I see other people's like 10 pounders just lay up on the surface and come to them. I'm like, why did mine have to fight so hard?
Probably because you hit him in the face with a 3/4 ounce jig.
Maybe.
Yeah, you didn't stick a hypodermic needle into their you know, nose. You went ahead and socked them.
True.
That's phenomenal.
That's an amazing catch.
What did that one come on? That, I mean, I know it was a jig, but did it come on the white jig or the green
white jig?
On the white one. Yeah, that one right there, right?
Yeah.
No weed guard.
Oh, you're taking the weed guard off it.
Yeah. I wasn't fishing cover with it, so I just trying to get a better hookup with it.
Do you cut the weed guard off, or is it just a jig that doesn't have a weed guard?
I took my pliers and just pulled it out. Usually it has a weed guard.
Gotcha. Gotcha. With the freeloader.
Yeah. It's a fluke type bait. Yeah, I want to be able to buy some more.
Fluke type bait.
Yep. Is there anything with that jig, like the way the head is, that makes it like, that's not a traditional like flipping style jig head. Is that like the way you're fishing on suspended fish? Is that head like what is that doing? Does it help you the way it's designed like that?
I'm not really sure. I know when it's on the bottom, it comes through like cover a little better. I like throwing a football head, but you'll get like coming up the back of a brush pile and you won't even get the hook snagged, but it'll just sit on the back and you can't get it to like roll over whatever you want it to. And that jig seems to come through things better.
Yeah, that it kind of looks like a mix between a football and a, you know, traditional flipping like style jig.
Right. It's like a wide archy, which I like that for crawling like through rocks too. So like it doesn't get in all the cracks of the rocks. I mean, it still gets in them, but not as bad as some.
Are you doing anything with your jigs? You know, are you going denser or thinner on your skirts at all? Are you making any kind of mods there?
I'll trim it sometimes, get a little extra floof out of it, but for the most part, I just fish it out of the box. They're really nice jigs, though.
Who makes them?
They're the Greenfish Tackle. Little
rubber. Oh, okay, Greenfish.
Yeah, they got that round rubber.
Yeah, it's a round rubber jig.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I like them.
Is that the one that Kyle's throwing to?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys got a little deal going on with that thing.
It's fun.
That head is different from the football style that you often throw, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I got one right here. It's kind of like, it's more of like a flipping style jig. Just, I don't know how to describe it really.
It's
just
a little different.
Yeah.
You were having fun talking about it on live. Like, you know, your approach is very simplistic, but you made a big adjustment. You changed colors when you had to. This week.
It's crazy.
When did you use which color?
It seemed like the fish shallower, I'm not exactly sure what the forage is, but of course, crawfish, but like it seemed like the brown could get those fish a lot easier. Just they'd go down and eat it, but it might have been too because they were still suspended, but they were like 4 foot from the bottom, so they just go down and grab it. Where they just like, I had some fish over 40 foot at the beginning of the tournament that they'd go down like 10 foot and then have to come back up.
Wow.
Yeah.
What would you say you caught more on, the white jig or the green pumpkin?
It started off, tournament was colder. And I think the first couple of days, the white jig carried me pretty good. But then as they moved up, it progressed into the brown jig. And by the last day, it was like mostly the brown jig. I think I weighed in one or two on the white
jig. Right. Are you going no weed guard on the brown one as well?
No, I got a weed guard on that one just because I'll throw it at anything like brush, stumps, docks. Gotcha. I caught one off a dock. That was impressive. I just didn't even scope it or anything. I just threw at it.
How about it?
It can still happen.
Yeah, I'm like, there's some stairs that go down in the water. I know those are always good. Flip, thump. Like, that's cool.
Daggum. It's so easy, but yet it's not, man. What type of areas? Like you said you found these fish in like the pre-practice period.
Right.
Were these wintering areas? What were they like?
It was honestly an area of lake with no trees because I was sick of hitting my trolling motor off trees. I didn't want to break anything. So I was like, I'm going to go fish where there isn't trees. Fish for less fish, but ones that'll probably bite.
That's probably why you didn't have any competition.
Yeah. there were some sneaky little spots in there too. Like made the isolated spots even better just because there was so much nothing.
So what were the isolated spots like? Rock outcroppings or channel turns or what?
One was like a tire pile. There was another one that was just some random brush and stuff like that. And right. Then a couple of, I don't know if there were rocks or like little foundation pieces, but just little things like that.
And you were targeting those, like a lot of your fish too, I think, you know, were open water fish, but you caught a lot of fish off the targets as well.
I did. Like, that's why I caught a lot with forward facing, just suspended, but like, I have to mention the ones that were on the targets because they were just flipped to the target and they'd bite it. Like, I didn't really, of course I used my forward facing, but it definitely could have been done without it.
Right. Just identifying the habitat. That's
right,
man. That's pretty cool. Spending your time focusing on the nothing banks that everybody else is ignoring, man, that's priceless.
Right. I mean, first time I went to fish in the timber, I was like trying to catch a fish and the wind blew me in a tree and I almost fell in the water. And I was like, I'm done with this.
I know one of the dudes busted a hole in his boat. Who was that?
Soko.
Yeah, that's right. That was bad.
And that can happen, man. That's people that have never been there. It's like, it's impossible to get from point A to point B. You know, you can't even idle down the bank without smashing your boat up, you know?
Right. I was trying to scan because I'm a big side scan guy and I'm like bouncing off trees and then come. Like there's one with a fork and I get up on it like I'm on a trailer. I have to like almost put the boat on pad to get off of. Like this is not fun.
Just avoid the timber altogether, man.
So did you do a bunch of side scanning in practice on your first case?
A ton.
What did you what
practice? Just like I had the whole lake scan pre-practice.
Did you find anything saucy?
There's some juice that they weren't on. Gone when we go back at some point.
Gotcha. No, so in that pre-practice, you spent a lot of time just looking for habitat, cover, you know, structure, stuff like that. You weren't necessarily graphing fish.
No, I usually don't look for fish just because they change so much. I just like having, I like being like a local at these lakes and having every spot I can go run to, like back home, have like a milk run and just learn every spot.
Yeah, knowing the environment.
Right. And then use some of those and expand on whatever you can find in official practice and just stuff like that.
I'm surprised, like, all these fish aren't biting, right? Your jig, right? A lot of them have to look away. Look at that face. No, they're all biting.
No, I threw out a lot and a lot of them ate it. Sure. There's on this place, there's some places we go that most of them don't bite it, but this was really fun.
Man, I
fished for less fish, and I think that's why my days were a little slower. But usually when I saw one, I could at least get it to strike. Like, I could get it to do something and hook them, but I at least get something out of them. Quite often hook them.
So, because I'm thinking, you know, man, how can you just be so persistent with one bait? Like, if they're turning away and they're not reacting to it, don't you have a freeloader in your back pocket on the spinning rod to throw in there?
Yeah, and I try to cast the spinner on, it'll probably go behind me. How I am with those. I kind of grind it out when I can.
Just being persistent and almost bullying those fish into biting.
Yeah, if I can.
Yeah.
Or a lot of it's timing, too. Like, you'll run up to a brush pile, see them go down, and you'll, like, get one to bite, and then you hook the brush pile somehow. And you're like, I swear I felt a bite, but then you come back an hour later and you throw to it and it doesn't even get halfway through the brush pile and they bite it. And it's just, a lot of it's just timing.
Yeah. So you were you, how many fish a day were you catching?
Probably the first day was a little slower. I think I only caught like 8 that day, but the other days were like between 12 and 16.
Yeah, that's a pretty good fishing day.
I was going to say, it was pretty good numbers for here. I think a lot of guys were only catching like 7.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive stuff. Now, what have you, like, you're talking about reading the fish and the importance of that. I mean, what have you learned? What can you help us with, like species identification? Are you able to just quickly, that's a drum, that's a carp. All right, now we got a bass.
On most places, yes. The only problem I was having on this place is the bass are the size of the carp. Like every giant dot I saw, and over the bass, and eventually one would like look up at your bait, and you'd be like, "Oh, that's not a carp."
Look up at your bait. Hold on. Pause. Look up at, you know, when they look up at your bait.
Yeah.
Is that because the fish moves and your return starts to burn harder?
Yeah, you can see it like light up. And sometimes those big fish, they'll sit like this and you can actually see them like turn their head upwards, like their whole body shifts just because they're so big. You can pick them up.
Right. Like most of the bass, it seems like most of the bass on Fork, you could see the difference in there. Like you could see the tail.
Yeah.
And that's just because they're big enough.
Yeah.
Right. Where like, say like a 3.5 pound smallmouth, you don't necessarily see the tail. You more so just see that
you see the blob. Yeah.
Gotcha. That definitely makes it tricky because like the way that, you know, on say Champlain or other places, like where you can tell the drum or the drum because of the tail. Right. But then on Fork, it's like, well, it could be a bass. It could be a drum because they're all this.
They're all like 10 pounds.
That's crazy.
And like that 9.9, I almost didn't throw at, but I was like, I had nothing else to look at. I was like, let me try it. And then it was a bass. And I was like, wow, I guess I got to start throwing at all of these.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. It's so interesting. Yeah. They're the same size as the carp. And that's how you would distinguish them on another body of water, right? A giant blob that can't be a bass, you know, we got to move on.
But you see like a little one and it's like, that's either a crappie or a bass.
Right. Now, how do you like, all right, this fish isn't catchable. What have you learned from that perspective? Like, should I spend time with this fish or should I just leave him alone or maybe come back? Yeah. What have you learned there?
I mean, it depends. Like, I'm still learning about that part myself. Like, some of them are, they'll do things and act non-interested. And then suddenly, like, I'll see people cast like 7 or 8 times. And then that like 9th cast, suddenly they get the fish to bite. I'm like, well, I usually give it like 3.
Right.
Move on. It just depends on the fish, I guess. I don't really know myself.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, when you're dealing with that 3/4 ounce jig, I mean, you're getting a response so quick, you know, like, you know, he's in or he's out. I'm moving on to the next fish.
That's kind of what it is. It's either going to happen in 3 or less, or it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. Do you do anything funky with your settings? Are you, you know, what are you doing to dial in there?
I don't really know. I just run my color limit kind of high to get rid of some of the like clutter in the whole thing, but most of it's just norm, like any normal setting.
So you're running your color gain pretty high?
Yeah. Actually, yeah. So I run the color gain pretty high and then I run the color limit pretty high. And
color limit kind
of gets rid of, like, it makes seeing fish on the bottom a little harder, but it gets rid of a lot of that, like, just like fuzz, I guess.
Right. So is your color limit in the same like set where you find the setting in your settings? Is it in the same as the color gain? And that's different than the gain on the main screen.
It is. And then I run the actual gain. I run everything pretty high.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're going to have to turn our gain up a little bit now because our screen,
our camera,
our return keeps dropping on our camera. We still got you, by the way, so we can still hear you and you can still hear us.
Perfect. I see it going like no signal or something. And I'm like, okay, that's not me.
No, yeah, it's not. It's our camera from 1942.
Yeah, we're turning up the color settings as we speak.
Yeah, we're adjusting the palettes. What color palette do you run?
Just the regular amber.
Amber. Okay. Okay.
It's just, I've had it so long that that's kind of just in my mind. That's what it is.
Gotcha.
I know some people like blue.
Talk to me about, have you dialed in? I remember when I interviewed you last time, you were talking about using perspective. Do you use that a lot? Is that something you use sparingly, or how do you use it?
So I didn't use it a ton this past week, but there's some places we go, especially when I'm fishing rock, that it's like I use it a lot. Or if I'm fishing more like structure fish, because these fish were like, you'd have like, if they're a structure, it would be a whole brush pile. Like it wouldn't be like a little stick that's like half laying on the bottom that you kind of can't pick up with your live, that you can pick up with your perspective. It's like, usually I use it a lot, but this one I didn't use it a ton. Toledo, I used it quite a bit.
So if it's a big, if it's a big piece of habitat, you use your perspective a little bit more.
Yeah. Or if I'm trying to hit like an isolated spot, like one little stick or something, and I kind of like, say it's laying across the bottom like this, I can't really see it with the forward, but I can see it with the perspective and get an idea like where I need to be.
Right. Right.
I can go from there, because sometimes those fish will hide, not even see them.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's, do you run them simultaneously? Like, do you have one perspective and one, sticks?
Yeah. I have for the past couple of years.
I gotcha.
What about a upgraded screen? Are you on the MBT train?
Yeah, I have one. Gotcha. I like it so far.
60 inches.
It's a 16.
16. That's modest. You know,
it is. Some guys are running what, 22s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now you're running a 16, and what's the advantage of that? Is it just the MBT is less glare? What does that provide to you?
Less glare and a little less money.
Okay.
But they've got like a blue glass that's really cool too. It shows up well. It's a good unit. All you really need is like a mirroring unit. So yeah. I'm just mirroring off one of my graphs in the back, and it seems to be good so far.
Man, that's great. I would think my biggest problem would be is failure, is equipment failure, where I'm out on the water and I'm not getting readings. It's, I've got electrical glitch going on with all that sonar. You got to be good at troubleshooting problems.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be kind of mechanically inclined or just good at electrical, one of the two.
Have you run into some trouble out there?
Not really yet, other than like turning it off and turning it back on. That seems to solve a lot of the problems so far.
Have you ever looked into a career with Xfinity? Because that's how they solve all of their connectivity issues. Have you tried turning it back on? Yep.
Have you tried putting in rice?
Yeah.
That's drop it in rice.
Do you do your rigging yourself, or do you have somebody that does it, like a shop you work with? Or
I've done a couple things myself, but I know there's a couple of kids that fish the college series, Caleb Hudson and Tanner Haddon. They call themselves top marine technicians, and they rig my boat for the most part, like all the fake stuff. They did a really good job.
Gotcha. It just, I'm always curious as to that, because it's good to have somebody that does it for you, but if you have a hand in getting it done and something fails, you know where to start the troubleshoot. And like Pete was saying, if something goes on the water, you want to be able to get that tidied away,
like when we were doing it, I was there the whole time too, so I understand everything in and out. Right. I've got the same boat. It's a 2022 Skeeter, same boat since I've started the Open, so I know the boat really well as well.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's key stuff. I whenever my computer glitches or gets weird, I call Jocelyn. So
yes, he does.
Jocelyn, I can't see the fish. What do I do? Well, hey, you won Watts. You've qualified for the Classic. It's off limits now. Did you get to go to Grand and scout it prior to the off limits?
I did. I spent a lot of December there.
Nice.
I just left home and was like, I'm going to find everything in this lake. And I think I did that. So I'm excited.
That is exciting, man. It's that there's a lot of offshore habitat there.
Yeah,
to play around with. Have you been like, has forward facing that technology revealed itself on Grand in any of your research? Are guys winning that way there?
Yeah, well, it's hard to research Grand, especially early season, because everything's like forward facing with Alabama rigs. Like, that's the big thing there.
Right. So it's
like, I'm like, well, we can't use that. So what does that do to the weights? Like, what's the way around that?
Yeah.
There is a big difference.
I know the way around that. You throw a 3/4 ounce jig.
Yeah. That's my loophole.
Well, that's interesting. So, you know, yeah, the Alabama rig is going to be out. It's the water temperature. What do you figure the water temperature is going to be by the time you guys get there?
I don't know, to be honest with you. It's like, it's pretty warm there right now. It's at least mid to high 50s, at least, probably 60s. They'll probably be doing exactly what I don't want them to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, if the big majority of the fish hit the banks, that's going to leave less fish to fish for, you know, offshore. But
I'll be okay with that, though. I wouldn't mind a bank tournament. I feel like we need one of those.
Yeah, you feel comfortable in a bank tournament.
I mean, I'm all right with it. I'm just happy to be out fishing. But it's just for Bassmaster and everything. Like, it would not hurt to have a classic, like, be a bank tournament.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see what the weather brings. Maybe it'll happen. I suspect that there's still going to be plenty of fish offshore for you guys.
So. I'll be doing my thing regardless, but whether it's good or bad.
Yeah,
Tyler, we got a couple questions on our message board. I'm going to throw a couple of them at you. Chuck Fish wants to know, when you're up north fishing for smallies, are there anything that you do differently on your jigs, like possibly the TRD type of deal on the back?
It depends on the smallmouth, because like the main smallmouth, I'll just throw a big jig at just to get the biggest, like they'll group up and I'll usually get the biggest one out of the group on that. But then like St. Lawrence, apparently they don't bite that. I figured that out last year, so I'm going to have to change it up.
Gotcha. And then Dave Stottlemyre wants to know, what pound test line are you throwing on your jigs?
So I'll usually do 22 pound Tatsu.
Oh, damn.
But sometimes really I'll go up or down.
You are not taking it easy on these fish.
I want them in the boat. I don't want to play with them.
Well, you had that one that played with you into your motor there. That was,
that was not good.
Let's hear it. Come on.
I was actually like on the bank kind of, and I saw a fish and I flipped to it. It eats it. Like, this is when I was figuring out the brown jig bite, like throughout the tournament, and I swing and I can tell it's like a 6 or 7 pounder. And for some reason, this fish was fighting like it was 12 pounds. Like, it was digging and jumping and running all over. And like, I thought, like, so we had 3 people in the boat and a camera bag with like all like a camera and all kinds of stuff. So it wasn't exactly the easiest thing to run around the boat. And I'm like, if I stay like passenger side here, like he should just turn when he gets down by the power pole and then come to me. And he turned, but he turned into the motor. So I had to like jump over a camera bag and like be nimble for once and then try to get it out of there. Meanwhile, I thought it was barely hooked at the time because I saw a lot of jig in the corner of its mouth. And I was like, this thing is coming off for sure. But then got around and I had a few frays in my line. So I was like, that was scary, but I ended up catching it.
Wow.
That's awesome. What a cool story. Helped you get one of those century belts.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's all I wanted. I was like, I hope I get a shot at getting one, because I knew getting in the top 10 after day 3 was going to be hard.
Right.
There were a lot of people that had shots that didn't even make it there.
Yep. Yeah, that was, I don't know if there was ever another tournament where everybody in the top 10 made it and got a century belt. I think Falcon would have probably been the closest one, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I caught 30 on the first day and I had a 3-pounder, but I decided to leave my area and maybe try to get a big one. But 30, I thought I'd be like top 10 at least, like not super far out of it. And then I was in like 14th and didn't even get a camera.
But 30 pounds. Yeah, we got to step it up tomorrow, Rich. Yeah. I only got 30 today.
You got like a 5, like the of other days, I'm like, well, I got a 5-pounder as a small one. How do I call a 5-pounder even on this place?
Man, that's that I wouldn't be surprised if everybody that fishes is on their way to Fork right now. You know,
I agree. I would not be surprised either.
Man, that place is truly amazing. You talked about you were going to say you do change your line diameter. When do you make the adjustment to lighter or heavier?
It, like, I'll honestly usually change line instead of jig weight just to get a faster fall rate or a slower fall rate, depending on what I'm doing, to try to get it cut through the water, or if I want a bow in it.
Is it all fluorocarbon you're using?
Yeah, it is. Okay. I'll go up to 25 sometimes, especially if I'm fishing like marina docks and things.
Slow it down.
Yes. Like, be able to skip it still, slow it down. And then it also helps that if you're like fishing around metal or something, you might get a chance at giving fish out.
Yeah.
Raw.
Yeah. Like fishing around outboard motors. And
yeah.
Stuff. So.
Yeah.
That, yeah. That's
zebras, zebra. All of it. Yeah.
Zebras up north.
Yeah. Man.
Well. That's what was your weight? Because you have one of the, I mean, I think everybody in the top of that tournament has like an all-time, one of the all-time heaviest weights. What was your total?
I don't know the exact. I know it was like, I think it was 124 pounds and 9 ounces. That's a lot.
That is an absolute lot. I think Trey is like, I don't know, third, fourth, or fifth on the all-time list, and you're probably right there in the top 10 or 15 for sure. In your first year out, man, that's awesome, man. That's second
tournament.
Your second tournament. Oh my gosh! Now you got to get that big classic trophy on your shelf.
Yeah,
you know,
we're gonna have to get a new shelf. Things big.
No kidding. Well, I know not that many people have done that. I know Mike has won the classic, of course, and Brian Kirchel from Connecticut has won the classic. You know, so there's a New Englander. I think if, you know, when you get the big trophy in a few weeks, I think you'll be one of two. I can't think of another New Englander that has one.
I don't know. I'd like to be the next, but it's fishing. You never know.
Well, you do never know, but you seem to have a knack for it. And I, like I said, I love the attitude, and you know, that's going to carry you a long way. You're having fun doing it. Sorry about the shoe thing. We can write a letter to Bass. I don't know if it'll help or not, but sometimes letters from the dean go a long way. We'll see if we can get you an exemption, get you a hall pass or something.
That'd be cool.
Well, I like it, man, and I appreciate you hanging out with us again, man. I hope we get to talk to you again real soon, man. Maybe after Hopefully. The classic, we'll have you back on and have fun talking about how you pulled it off.
Hopefully, I'd love to be here for that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Well, we're gonna have fun watching you, and then thanks again. Thanks for sharing all that insight, man. It's really helpful to everybody watching, and we'll be rooting for you in a couple weeks at the classic. We'll be there with Bass University at the booth at the expo, but hopefully we won't see you there. Hopefully
I want everyone, but I really don't then.
Yep. We want to see you coming across the stage with the big trophy. So good luck to you. Good luck to you, my friend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tyler Williams, everybody. What a great attitude, man. I love the ease with which he goes about it. Just makes it sound so easy.
Yep. Just going fishing, throwing a jig.
Just going to the bank and throwing a freelader on a chatterbait and catching 7-pounders.
That's it.
Me and just Tyler like could be best friends, man. Just throwing jigs all the time.
Just throw jigs. That's right. Just throw jigs all the time.
I feel like I would want to be barefoot too.
Yeah.
I was fishing.
It's very comfortable
watching the Tyler and Kyle at the weigh-in. Like, Kyle's running around. He on the final day, he took some random guy's slides, forgot them, and had thrown up on the stage.
Yeah.
So he was wearing other people's shoes. I don't know. Tyler had his slides on hand, but that was funny.
Yeah. Kyle, thank you. Our boy Kyle Patrick with another strong finish, an amazing finish And he was my pick at Fork in fantasy fishing again, by the way, as well as Justin. Yeah, we had Kyle on the show, and you guys watched it last week. He's talking a little bit about the fishing conditions, and it changed my picks, to be honest with you, and we got a little insight about what was happening at Fork and picked some good picks to totally dominate the Bass University fantasy fishing
team. I wouldn't say totally dominate. I wouldn't go that far, but you did come out on top. Long season ahead, Pete. Come on.
I'm in last.
You were doing good then.
I was.
You were ahead of Riz there for a little while, Josh.
I know. I was very excited about it. And then all of a sudden, some random guy just catches a fish. And yeah, one of Riz's
guys. You had a couple good picks. Who were the ones that you had your bucket five guy? Who was that?
Yeah. Oh. Who did I have this
Riz
week?
Riz is the least in fantasy fishing.
I had Cooper. Gallant.
Cooper Gallant, that's the one. That was a great pick, and he wound up doing extremely well.
Yeah, in the top event. 10. Yeah.
Top 10 without even catching a limit every day. Yep. Crazy.
Two out of 4 days, he didn't have a limit. He top 10.
Wow.
It's crazy.
It's crazy how that can – I love that Ken Duke statistic that he gave to us one time, that most classics are won, and their guys do not catch a limit every day. The vast majority of classics are won without a full limit. Crazy talk. Guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to give away some stuff. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome to Minnow King. How can I help you?
Everything looks good. I'm friggin' starving, man. Been spawning all morning.
TLI, bro. What do you want?
I'll take a Crush City freeloader and gizzard shad.
Anything to drink.
Water.
Pull ahead, please. Welcome to Minnow King.
We're going to have what he's had.
Yeah, throw me in a Ned BLT, too.
Go ahead, please.
Calm down. Quit feeding so much. Hey, man, I'm trying to, man.
If you overfeed him, he's going to hide under a log.
Right here, Aquaview, mandatory equipment in my boat. I say it all the time. The smallmouth hide in the cracks in the rocks, and just saw a little bit of the same kind of rock with the cracks in it. And I realized that I had to put a bait down there. You wouldn't, you know, idle over them and see them on your screen. You had to put a bait down there and suck them out of the rock. So, Aquaview, big assist on this one.
Sports and Outdoors Bassmaster Classic Champion, Jeff Guff.
Why do you love catching fish and rods?
I'm truly losing less fish.
Is the sensitivity of the rod.
That's made right here in North Carolina in the USA.
Strongest, lightest rod, 100% bait here in Sanford, North Carolina.
From the drop shot rod to the flipping stick, every rod has a purpose to it, and I rely on them all the time when I'm out doing a tournament.
Durability in the John Cruise Worming series, the counterbalancing in the handle.
It's the only rod I found that can withstand my hook set. Boom, goes the dynamite.
On the water not spent fishing is a moment wasted. That's why Minn Kota and Humminbird have joined forces to bring you the One Boat Network. Products that communicate and integrate to help you take full command of your boat. Born from our commitment to making the most advanced fishing gear even better by making it work together, the One Boat Network will help you find, get to, stay on, and catch more fish. When One Boat Network products talk to each other, they can navigate your boat automatically. They can give you a crystal clear view of what's below with no messy wires. And they can let you lower, raise, and change shallow water anchor modes from anywhere on the boat. But that's just the beginning. We're never done innovating, integrating, and making your boat simpler and easier to control. All so you can make every second on the water count.
Live.
we are back.
I cannot believe the classic is so close.
2 weeks exactly. Well, yeah.
Well, for you, weeks. Yeah, leaving. That's insane.
2 weeks.
It's going to be here before we know it. Looking forward to getting down there. We've roll? Are we? Did we roll out our classic deal?
We did this morning.
Yeah, this morning.
Yep, right. It's out there. So go check it out.
You guys have been sitting on the fence. Now's the time, right, JH?
Yeah.
Come on, $99 annuals and 50 days free.
It's awesome.
And if you're at the classic, come visit us at booth 3031.
Yeah, 3031.
Stop by and actually see how some of these seminars get made. We're going to be shooting some seminars at the classic. We're going to have some awesome guys down there with us. Bernie Schultz, Maddie Wong, JT Kelly. Just a few. There's many more. But yeah, stop by and see us. See how this whole thing rolls.
We have something for everyone, too. So
for everyone.
Everybody.
Nope.
Grand prize question going in the BadShoe.tv chat.
Oh, boy.
Right now.
I can't wait to see it.
It's going
to
be a good one.
And you will win some Cortland braided line, hummingbird hat, and some Rapala products.
Oh, yeah. Like and share, winner. I don't know if we can do that because Facebook is partially down.
We have some shares that are popping up.
Showing on the screen here. So you run that one there.
You go right now.
Did you already put the question in the board?
Question now.
Go over and like and share right now, and I'll hold off.
Ah,
that's a good
Man, Brett ripped that one off really quick.
Come on. That was lightning.
Brett,
lightning in a bottle.
New Balance.
Shout out, Brett. He is the grand prize winner.
New Balance slides going on Tyler's feet.
That's right. I guess they have a couple plants in Maine. That's pretty interesting. Didn't know that.
That's a fact. It's so fascinating to listen to Tyler speak about his style and technique with ease, mm-hmm. with the ease with which he's able to just show up. It seemed like, if I had to sum up this interview, drive around, find a rock pile, a couple of tires, and a tree laying down, and then you throw a jig at it and catch 125 pounds.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
That's it.
I think add into it like
that's all you
practice for a week and just idle around the whole lake.
Yeah,
and then when the tournament starts, run every single thing that you've marked. Yep. Throw that jig at them, and 22 pound test.
Yep,
get them caught up in the motor, boat flipping them. Tyler Williams,
rookie
century belt.
He reminds me. He's got a Jordan Lee esque a vibe about him. You know, like Jordan Lee is unflappable. Like nothing bugs him, and
he's thinking about food when he's supposed to be practicing.
I know. Tyler has that same fishing. You just, let's go over here and throw at this rock pile. Maybe there'll be a fish there. And there is.
I think he's like John Cox. It's just.
Yeah.
Same.
Just laughing, smiling.
They're in that same category. Yeah. That personality can succeed. Because you think about the mental side of the sport and it sinks a lot of guys. You're out there for 8 to 10 hours and there's, you can apply a lot of pressure to yourself. And, the fish aren't biting. Oh, crap. What do I do? I've got $5,000 entry fee on the line. You know what I mean? You can start really building this pressure. These guys have the uncanny ability to just have fun and fish no matter what is raining down upon them, That's a gift. That right there is a superpower, dude. That is something.
And
he's got it. So New Balance, what was the question?
It was, what was the sneaker company that Tyler said he would like to be sponsored by?
Okay.
I thought that on the fly. I thought it was a good one. But
New Balance. I could see Ty rocking some And1 slides.
Yeah, yeah. Just like you and your And1 shorts.
Dripping.
Don't take advice on sandals from Rich, though, because his are always stinky.
Yeah.
That's the way man sandals are supposed to be.
I got it figured out now, Joss. I got a system. I keep like 4 different pairs in rotation all summer long.
Nothing will ever smell as bad as when we were putting the flooring down. I'm like, what is that smell?
Well, we were in Texas in June.
And I had been living at, you know, out of my truck for 3 weeks. That's all I was wearing. Michelle from American Bait Works had to, you know, make a rescue mission to Walmart to keep our team alive so my sandals wouldn't kill everybody.
Thankful for
what
Michelle.
Did you get like Lysol spray or
no? Nah, she went to.
She got new slides. For they new were slides. That bad.
Yeah,
like we put him in a corner and said, "Stay there."
They were bad. they were bad. And it's okay. In my defense, and leading up to that event, I fished the BFL on the bay, left straight from the BFL, drove to Alabama, and then drove to Georgia, and then drove to June, and those flip flops never left my feet. And it was that, in the middle of the summer.
And that's your defense?
I'm rolling with it. Yeah.
I love it. We worked too many days together.
It was bad.
Too funny. Good stuff.
We have a like and share winner, Eddie Griffith.
Eddie. Thank you for liking and sharing. Whatever happened on Facebook seems to have run its course.
Come on, Zuckerberg. I'm going to say Wahlberg. Mark Zuckerberg, get it together.
He seems to have fixed something.
Yeah.
But
a shout out to Sean Boyle. And who else did we see in Texas? We saw
Sean. We saw Dan Allen. We saw Tom Lang from TFFC.
Yeah, shout out to those guys for stopping by saying what's up.
Yeah. And there's definitely more too. Yeah. If we missed you, we appreciate you.
Yep. All right. Let's do sub of the week.
Sub of the week of the year.
Who could that be?
It goes to these crawfish are the sub of the week. Eating me and Rich.
What did you call them?
Mud bugs.
Come on.
That was 10 pounds there. And so I got to say, we have dialed in our crawfish eating techniques because we ripped through 10 pounds on the final day and like it didn't take long. That was
definitely our most efficient crawfish derby eating right there. That was, we just went for it there.
Yep. I think I would rather deal with like those flip flops than watching the crawfish butchering that goes on. You know, with the yellow running down the arms, and
that's what it's all about.
Oh yeah. Man,
you know what I should have done? We should have brought up the video of all the ants that when I stepped in the ant. But I think there were some cuss words in there.
Oh man,
you stepped in an ant pond.
Oh, young Beetle had a tough run on his shoes for what was it at Toledo? You stepped in a hole and your feet and you soaked your foot.
Yep.
And then at Fork, he stood in an ant bed fishing until there was thousands of ants crawling all over him.
Did you jump in the water?
No, I just took them off. And I'm standing there fishing, and I didn't feel them or nothing. I'm next to Riz, and then Luke Palmer's camera guy, Aaron. And Aaron went, "Yo." And Rich looked at me, and I looked down. And I was like, "Oh, my God." They're just crawling up my sweatpants, all over my shoes.
Did they bite you?
No. Nope. I was wearing pants, and I just took my shoes off, left them on the dock, and then just
I want to see the picture, man.
I want to see the video.
You are the sub of the week, JH.
There we go.
There it is. Look at that.
Mega.
I think the first one I caught was bigger, but
what do you think that weighed?
I don't know.
Is that the first? Is that the second one?
That's the second one.
The first one was a little bigger, and it was definitely pushing 7. Might have been in the mid-7s range.
The first one, I think, was probably 7. That one there was probably maybe 6.
Oh, that was all of 6.
Yeah.
They were both big, but you could put your whole hand in the mouth.
Man, like, that's awesome. The first one that I caught, like...
And we both are notorious for under... like, we were the opposite of Ike. Like big eyes him, we small eye him. When we had almost 25, we thought we had 21, like, this fall. And so, who knows? It was big, though. They were both big.
I can just tell you, the first one I caught, it just holding it, it just felt different, you know? Like, you're like, dang, this thing.
Yeah, he actually, I was taking pictures, and he had to put his arm down because his arm was getting tired. So that's how you know it's big.
Good one.
The second one, it wasn't, I mean, it was big, but it wasn't that different big, you know, but
What is your personal best?
Seven pounds, like right on the dot.
So that could have passed your.
Yeah, I think the first one probably was bigger than.
Yeah,
seven.
The first one's probably.
I mean,
I've caught a couple that I haven't weighed, like when I was younger, that were in that 6.5 to 7 pound range. But I guess my PB is one I weighed in a tournament that was 7 pounds, like on the dot. But I think that first one I caught is probably my new PB.
Nice.
7 pounds in a tournament.
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah, I know you do.
That's awesome. That's
because he won that tournament. And that's why he's saying that.
You caught a 7 pounder and didn't win?
No, I didn't. Nope.
Wow.
I caught in that tournament. I don't know. That was a late summer tournament. I caught like a 4.5 and that 7 in like the last 30 minutes. And I think we still only had like 18, 19 pounds. But yep. And nice. That PB came on a chatterbait too.
Well, so I think you might need to put that jig down, pick up that chatterbait.
We'll see. Tyler Williams says differently.
Yeah, it's working pretty good for Ty.
You know who teaches about forward facing sonar, and we're thrilled to Randy have Blockett. Him with us is Ben Milliken, who has been released last week. If you guys have not seen it, the stuff we talked about today just scratches the surface.
Seriously.
About how to use that technology. If you're wanting to get involved and try it, this is what you got to go check it out. Ben breaks it down incredibly well. Mm-hmm. If you're advanced and you want to get to the level, you know, where you can be competitive in tournaments, it's all there too. Ben really did an amazing job at Bass University this year when we were in Texas. You know, the compliments keep coming in. So no matter how you feel about it, go check it out. You know, it's gonna help you use this technology. And I'm a little bummed out about some of that negative stuff that we talked about at the beginning part of the show.
Me too.
These kids are having tremendous success. They're operating within the rules and the context of the tournaments, and they're kicking ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And you got to tip your hat to them.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I had it too. You figured out how to do it better than me. Good for you. You're a champ. I'm gonna improve my skill set and figure it out.
And like I said, I whether you're pro or con, I have no problem with people voicing their opinions one way or another against it. It's when it starts to become attacking like an individual is being attacked is where it draws the line. And especially when it's all running through social media and, you know, there's bots out there doing it. There's fraud accounts doing it. I hope you know who I'm talking to. And it's just weak, man. It's like, you know, everybody's got, you know, if you think Trey's not reading the comments and seeing some of that crap, you're wrong. Yep. You're wrong. And everybody's got feelings and it ain't freaking right. So
no, it's such a shame, man. Cause like, whatever, you can look at Trey and say he's young, you know, he's got an expensive rig and stuff like that. Well, he was fortunate to have that, and he gives that, you know.
But he still put the work in.
He still put the work in, and he, you know, is thankful for what he has, obviously. He says that every time he's on stage. He thanks his parents for helping him. And, you know, if you were 18, 19, and you had that opportunity to be able to do what he did and put in the work like he did, and then you're just still going to hate on him for using live sonar when everybody in the elite field can use the live sonar and put in the time using live sonar. Doesn't make sense. Messed up, in my opinion.
One of the things that is not accounted for is when things are, you can be complacent and not be a aggressive competitor when you have things thrown at you. Like I talk about it with guys with a lot of talent when they're young, like in baseball or football, those guys tend to not work as hard because they don't have to work as hard when they're young, and they wind up getting passed by all the guys that learn that work ethic. And there's no way around it, man.
Right.
You're not getting where you're at.
Time on the water will still be king. It'll always be it.
I don't care, man. That work effort ethic and that competitiveness is what gets you ahead. Anyway, congratulations to Trey. Big win.
Yep.
Go check out Ben Milliken's stuff. What are we releasing this week?
This week, we're releasing Brian Latimer, who's our classroom seminar, BLAT. And the title of this one, and stick with me now, it's called You're Trying Too Hard. kind of funny with everything we were just talking about, but that's that it's
the Tyler Williams approach.
Yeah. So the theory on the seminar is learning to be the best angler within yourself you can be, right? Like, you know, knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are, how to identify them, and how to attack a day on the water or a tournament day based on that theory that Brian has. And it's really good when it's an insightful one. It'll force you to think. And that's one of the biggest things in fishing is you got to be able to attack the fish mentally as well as, you know, just knowing, you know, where to be, what to throw. You got to have the right mindset. And then I believe this week in the on the water category, we have the Dean breaking down the Dean. That's the man breaking down the two most efficient rods that you could use if you're getting into fishing. We're throwing some basic style content out there, you know, for the guys that are just, you know, getting started in this thing and you want to learn how to set yourself up to have a successful day on the water or fishing from the bank, whichever you so choose. And this week we got Pete with the two rods that you need and why they are good choices to get you started in this game of bass fishing. So
we get a lot of requests for our basic content, and we love to keep bringing that to you guys because everybody's got to start at the beginning and build a good base, build a good foundation on, you know, everything to be able to, you know, get confident and be able to consistently catch fish throughout the country. So our basics are there. A lot of compliments on our kayak content, which we would continue to deliver to you guys. If you're a traditionalist and you're not interested in this new sonar fad, we Bass University's got a tremendous amount of traditional content about how JH uses a chatterbait and wax giants from the bank and all the types of content about the fish movements, seasonal patterns, and all the various strategies you want to learn to go out and have fun and consistently catch fish.
Yep.
So we got you covered, whether you're a beginner, whether you're a traditionalist, whether you're an advanced angler, wanting to excel with the new technology. We've got it all at Bass University at your fingertips. An amazing deal going on right now. We have our classic special going on that is going to carry us right through the Bassmaster Classic, where we hope to see you guys down there. Yep. You can come by and see us at the booth and see if Rich can figure out who his fantasy picks will be or are at the time.
Yeah.
But we're going to have fun down there doing that. We look forward to seeing all you guys. We thank you for watching today. Is there anything that I missed?
No, I don't think so. One more thing I got to say. This kind of flew under the radar when we were talking to Tyler. He's not going to go home until after the St. Lawrence River.
Yeah.
He's going to be on the road fishing, dialing in his skills. And JT, all these young guys are doing it. And some people are acting like they're just throwing the boat in the water and using this technology and catching fish when they're literally away from their families for months at a time, grinding, trying to get stuff dialed in.
No.
I think we can end on that. Sorry.
Nah, that's that's a powerful thing. That's a powerful message. My thought was, Justin, to add on that, like if I was a guy, and this has happened a lot of time, get my teeth kicked in, the best thing you could do is to stay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stay after that tournament and continue to work and continue to drive. And I'll be honest with you, the guys, I know the competitors that are on every one of these tournament trails are killers, and they are not going to stand. They're not going to stand by and let themselves get beat
right. Like
that. You know, it's rolling up your sleeves and getting after it.
Yep.
What do you got, Josh?
Howie said something that I also wanted to bring up. He said constantly great info on the Bass U plus the benefits of the sponsors. And I think what he means by that is our member benefits and how awesome they are, with AquaView being on there. I believe they're 30%, Missile Baits 30%, Rapala VIP.
A lot of percent.
Good that deal is because it's so good.
Cash and Rods. I mean, head over, check out our sponsors because they give our members such great discounts.
Yes, yes. Go check all that stuff out. Thanks for being with us, guys. We'll see y'all next week on another Bass University Live.